Welcome to this week's edition of Dugout Dish Podcast. I'm Andy Kirikides. As usual, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Keith Glasser. Keith, how are we doing?
Great. How are you?
Good, man. We got a good topic today. Comes via a listener, and we're going to touch on preparation for and how to stand out in the showcase and camp setting. Obviously, showcases and camps are a very relevant and popular way to gain exposure. How to be successful in those settings? There's some very obvious answers, but there's also some tips that we would like to share with the listeners here from our experience as coaches who have both evaluated in the true showcase setting. And then also, I think probably more importantly would be, how do you stand out in a camp setting where it's a little bit more intimate and, you know, on campus, fewer coaches, and what's that look like? So let's dive in. I'm going to kick it over to you, Coach. Give me your initial thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I actually kind of like this topic. We got the listener question actually about this. It was a little bit more detailed around the pitching end of things, and we'll get into that. But I the more I thought about it, the more I like this topic, just because it's, you know, the showcase camp setting can be a little daunting for student athletes who have not gone through that specific event yet. And I think regardless of how many you go through, depending on the type of camp or showcase you're at, it can get a little pressure packed. If you're an infielder, you're only going to get two balls at you. Glove side, backhand, slow roller. You know, you're going to get what, five balls? You have to show up and show out in those five balls for coaches to really want to follow up to see what you're going to do, whether or not the offensive session is next or follow you in games. You know, outfielders, generally you're going to get like three throws to a bag and then pop times and things of that nature. So you have a short window of time to actually really be able to grab somebody's attention who is there to recruit, to see whether or not, you know, you're going to be a guy that they're going to follow up with. So the kind of that pressure, but also the pressure of, you know, you go to some of these camps and you go to a PBR showcase, or you go to a Head First or a Show Ball or a Best in the US showcase. And there's a lot of coaches there, you know, and you can feel a little bit of pressure there, and, you know, coaches like it. I think I've said it before, like, it's what happens when you actually get into a game. It's going to be a little bit more pressure filled, and there's going to be things that are going to happen at a high clip of speed that speed up on you. Coaches want to see, can you slow this game down? What does that look like? You know, does the game speed up on you? Or, you know, do you get out of sorts? Do you get flustered? You know, can you keep your composure? Those types of things. And you kind of see it, you know, in a vacuum and under a microscope in a showcase and camp setting. But, you know, I think some of the things that we'll dive into tonight are, you know, try to get to what you can do to minimize those, you know, mistakes that have been made and will likely continue to be made for all of time, so that you can kind of put your best foot forward and be as prepared as you possibly can going into the showcase.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're in the pure showcase setting, the metrics are going to matter. But I think that we need to hit on a couple things that, from a coach's perspective, might matter more. And we've touched on this about metrics being able to translate to the game. All right. But I'm going to start with the 60 because it's the easiest one to talk about preparation for. You can practice this. You're going to run it. It doesn't matter where you go. You can have your stances on whether it's a valuable metric. Like, sure. But at the end of the day, it's the baseball version of the 40. Does it have a ton of relevance to your actual game speed? Maybe yes, maybe not. But if you go run a good time, like, it does matter. But one thing I would say to kids who are going to go to workouts and they're going to go to these showcases is you can work on the 60. Like, you should be running this in preparation for event, because those first 10 yards, those first 30 yards are going to be really important. And there is also a little bit of an element of conditioning, right? Like, if you're not sprinting, you're not going to run a good 60. It's farther than you think it is. So I think from a 60 perspective, it's usually the first thing you're going to do. it's the first thing that coaches are going to look at. And if you can run a good time because you've practiced it, or you can run a better time than you would if you didn't practice it, like, give yourself a chance there. I mean, I'm guilty of it. The first thing I would look at a showcase is like, give me a list of 60s, like, who can run? Because it's generally a pretty good measure of who's athletic. And, you know, we've talked about it on here before, and most coaches will tell you, like, athleticism in general trumps just about everything. And guys love people who can run. They love guys who showcase some athleticism. And the 60 time, while not a perfect metric, it is the metric that baseball works in. So, you know, you kind of play the hand you're dealt with, but prepare for that and practice, you know, run the first, you know, do the short sprint so that you can be good off the line. Cause I think that's a big piece for kids. And then do a little bit of conditioning around your sprint so you can put the best time forward that you can. So for me, the 60, like, I think it's the most trainable portion of this in terms of like a pure metric perspective. And, you know, I would advise kids, like, don't let your first 60 of the summer be your, you know, your first workout. You know, you should be running that, and you should be training it a little bit.
Yeah, the 60 is going to, I mean, I agree. There's going to be some people who don't really love it. Some people fall way too much in love with it, you know, but the reality is that the better athletes generally run faster. So it's going to be the first kind of thing that you're going to look to. And you know, if you like a lot of the skill set and it's maybe a tick below what you would generally like to see from a running standpoint, like, you can live with that. What's hard to live with is like the 7.5, 7.7, 7.8, you know, those 60s are really hard to live with unless you're just going to flat out bang in the box and you're going to drive in a lot of runs, and it's going to be, you know, there's some give and take there, right? But, you know, you can't necessarily be an 8.0 runner and play in the middle of the field. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen that at the college level. I haven't.
Yeah, I think in today's age, even, and this isn't an absolute, but you're not looking at a lot of first basemen that are running 7.5s and 7.6s anymore. Like, even those guys at the highest level, they're premium athletes, and the game has changed a ton when it comes to the defensive piece. And you'll see, like, if you're looking at the top level of Division I, those guys who are playing first base aren't, like, they can defend. Like, look at the kid who played defense for LSU. Like, obviously, he's the top of the food chain defensively in the country, but you're not – the days of just an absolute bat over at first base, they're not gone, but there's fewer of those guys. There's so many good athletes now that if you're not a good enough third baseman, but you're a really good high school third baseman, but you're not necessarily a college third baseman, that's the guy who's playing first now. It's not usually the high school first baseman anymore. And yeah, you can overcome it by being able to really hit, but athleticism matters. So, you know, you want to be able to showcase that the best you can in that 60, because it's the first impression you're going to make most of the time.
Yeah. I think the first base is probably one of the bigger ones in recent years, you know, and I think in part, you know, when you really break it down outside of the catcher, you know, at least in your infield, like, who's handling the baseball the most? You know, it's going to be your first baseman, you know, so I think there's been a little bit of mentality change, shift in that you want to have somebody who's fairly athletic over there. If someone's going to be handling the ball, you know, the most, you should probably have somebody who's fairly athletic and can do some things if they're going to be the ones that are handling it all the time. But you're right. You can train that, you know, the 60 you can train. You know, and I think the other part of the showcase, when the defensive side of things, you know, because generally speaking, we're going to run the 60 and then we're going to go to the defensive showcase. You know, so from the showcase, we're going, you know, generally it goes outfield, infield, catchers, you know, your outfielders, you know, sometimes they're fungoed, sometimes they're thrown, but you're going to get, you know, usually two to throws to second, two to third, and two or three to home. You know, I preferred seeing the balls hit so you can see how they, you know, outfielders can move in the outfield a little bit. But, you know, realistically, what coaches are looking for, what's your arm strength and how well are you moving in the outfield? Like, that's really all it is. They're not really going to be able to see what, like, how good you are at reading balls off the bat, things like that. Like, it's the ball is going to be hit right at you. You know, so they're trying to gauge how well of a mover you are, and then what that arm looks like, you know, from a showcase and arm carry standpoint, which are all things that you can train, right? Like you can train your arm strength. You can train how to work through and throw two bases, throw to second, throw to third, through the home. You don't even need people. You used to watch the old Tom Emanski, the back to back to back to back to back.
Throwing in a bucket, baby.
Yeah, with Fred McGriff out there. You know, but you can just throw a garbage can out there and throw to it. You know, it was actually something we used to do it when I was coaching RPI. Like we would have competition days. Sometimes we would just throw a garbage can out there and be like, all right, we're just going to throw at it from random spots on the field and come up with points. But there it promotes some athleticism because it's, you know, you think it's easy and it's not, but it gives you a target. It gives you something to work for. And it's something that you can actually do that is tangible, that is going to like directly not only translate to what you can actually do in game, but it is going to translate into a showcase setting so that you can actually showcase your abilities during that and have confidence in what it is that you're going to be doing when you get into that showcase. You know, I think one of the things, and I hope that we can kind of, you know, draw a clear distinction between it is, you know, we're not necessarily going to be talking strictly about, you know, how to showcase yourself and be a showcase player only. Like these are things that you can work on that are going to get you better to not only showcase, but they're actually going to help you in game as well, right? Like the better that you get at reading balls off the bat and being able to work through baseballs and throw guys out at bases, like the better it is, it's going to translate in game. You're going to see it in a showcase and you're going to be able to see it in the game too. Like the whole idea and what you really want to be able to do is take these things and translate it. You know, I've said it 1,000 times, like you gotta do it when the lights are on. You know, you can do it in a showcase, but when those lights flip on, you gotta be able to do it too. You know, so you're gonna wanna showcase that part of it. And then when you get to the gameplay, be able to make it, you know, yeah, I do this all the time. You know, cause that's gonna get, that makes you recruitable. Just being able to throw the ball hard doesn't necessarily make you recruitable. If that makes sense.
I think that's a huge piece. Yeah, it does. Because so from a showcase perspective, looking at an outfielder, how they move, right? That's important. How do you approach the ball? What kind of confidence do you have? How quickly can you get the ball in and out of your glove? I want to see actions that translate to a game. And seeing you take two big crow hops to go third, throw to third base, like that's great. Maybe you showed off some arm strength, but like you didn't throw anybody out because the ball travels faster than you can. You need to get the ball out of your glove. And I think one of the most undertrained defensive traits that there is that outfielders don't throw enough, right? It's a skill. And we'll talk about this with catchers, and I'm a huge proponent of it with infielders, that there's a big difference between having arm strength and being a good thrower. And if you're a right fielder and you can go to the line and turn and you have feel for hops and delivery and being able to make it a taggable ball, that is way more valuable to me than you trying to throw it 100 miles an hour and you're pulling guys off the bag. So in a showcase setting, yeah, you should be throwing the ball hard and you should be trying to show off your arm strength, but you should also be focused on the delivery of that baseball. And I'm way more impressed by the kid who has 85 mile an hour arm strength and can put the ball on the bag and give my infielders a chance to make a tag than I am with the kid who throws 91 and has no idea where it's going. Like that 91 doesn't play, right? And I think that translates over when you're talking about infielders, and it's something that breaks me when I watch these highlight videos and you'll see a kid, you know, 91 across the infield. Well, that's great, but he took 3 shuffles to do it and the guy's safe. Like I need to see game repeatable actions. I need to see the ball getting out of your glove. I need to see that you have some timing based on the pace of the ground ball. Like, do you have time to shuffle your feet and get your shoulder squared up? Great. But most of the time as an infielder, when that ball's moving and the guy's going down the baseline, I don't have time to get my feet in perfect position and absolutely let it rip. I need to be able to get the ball out of my glove. So when I'm watching infielders, that's an important piece for me, is the tempo that they're working at. Is their body under control? Can they throw from a couple different slots? Like, this whole throwing velocity thing from the outfield and from the catching position and from the infield position, this wasn't a thing 5 years ago. right? It's a metric, and I get it. And there is value in being able to quantify things. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm a huge proponent of data and being able to leverage it. But you don't need a radar gun to tell if an infielder can throw. Like, it's just that simple. Like, you can see the ball carry. You can see accuracy. Like, I need an accurate thrower. I need a guy who's got feel for the speed of the game and knows when the ball needs to get out and knows when he has time, knows how to deliver a long hop if he has to go in the hole. Like, those are the defenders that translate to the college game. So, yeah, do you want to throw the ball hard across the infield? Absolutely. But you don't need to shuffle three times to throw it hard. Like, you do that, and I don't know if you're any good because you didn't make a defensive move. Like, you basically caught the ball, and then you shuffled twice, and then you threw it as hard as you could, like you were doing a pull down. I don't need to see that from a coach's perspective. So throw it hard, but work at game tempo, have game type actions. Like, same thing with the outfielders. I want game throws. I want throws that I look at that kid and I go, that kid can throw in the game, not he's really good at throwing the ball hard after three curl hops.
Yeah, it's an important distinction, right? And as coaches who are watching it, you know, obviously, right? Like, I can't tell you how many times I've written things down and I've put in right dots next to letters, and I don't like what I saw because of that. Like, I don't know if that's going to play in game, because then if I go watch you and you continue to do that, like, everyone's going to be safe. You know, there's a reason that guys hold stopwatches when they go recruit. They're getting guys down the line. They're trying to see if you can actually get guys out in a time frame that is going to play within the college confines of speed. You know, so, I have my stopwatch out, and the ball gets hit off the bat, watch starts. It's a 5+ every time. Like, you're not throwing anybody out ever. Not going to throw them out. So if you're going to continually do that, like, you know, it's just never going to play. You know, and I think especially with infielders too, you know, the at you and the and I get it, this is a showcase setting, we want to see how people move, but like, for me, this, I'm talking me personally, like, yes, I watched the two balls that are hit at you in the glove side, but I locked in on whether or not you could go bare hand and then turn it into a slow roller and look athletic doing it and make the plays. I, for me personally, think that the backhand and the slow roller is the separator between guys who can really defend and guys who are just going to be average. Because if you can get to the backhand and you can get that ball across the diamond, you can stick your back foot in the ground and get that ball across the field. That shows me that you have arm strength. That shows me that you have some feel for what you're going to be doing with your body. And then when you can go slow roller and we can throw off the correct foot and get that ball to first base, same thing. It's going to show arm strength. It shows athleticism. Those two things to me separate out who I think is going to be able to defend in college and guys that I don't think are going to be able to defend in college. Because I think the majority of people can field balls at you, right at you. And I think the majority of people can go glove side because it's easy. It's hard to turn backhand and figure out your feet, how your foot position is. Do I have to stick this? What do I have to do? Do I work through this ball? Those things are difficult to do, you know, but those are also things in the context of this conversation that you can work on. Like, you can work on going backhand. You can work on slow rollers. And again, the better that you get at it from a training and practice standpoint, the better it's going to show up in a showcase, but it's also going to show up in a game, where now you actually have that in your repertoire and your toolbox as an infielder to be able to do that stuff. And I think one of the biggest limitations, in my personal opinion, on younger infielders is their ability to go backhand and slow roller. You know, a lot of guys want to try to work around that ball. They don't trust themselves to be able to get to it. You know, they'll see the guys dive at it when they can get their feet in position and go, and they don't have the trust and the faith in it to do it. You know, I think if you can drill that in from a practice and training standpoint, it's not only going to make you better it's going to make you a better overall infielder, but it's going to give you the confidence to be able to do it in a showcase setting and then also be able to do it in a game. Because if I watch that in a showcase and you're good, like, I'm circling your name, and then I'm going to make sure that I watch you gameplay and see what that looks like. Because if you can do it in a showcase setting, you can do it in a game, like, we're cooking with oil. Like, now, you know, and for guys in the middle of the field, like, it's going to depend on, you know, obviously a little bit more of your bat. But if you can defend and your hitting is maybe a tick below what you're looking for, like, guys can live with that. And then, you know, build up your offense on the tail end. It's harder to live with the offense and have below average defense. Like you're more likely to take the guy that is a better defender and maybe a little less hitter than the guy who can hit a little bit more but can't defend his way out of a wet paper bag.
I mean, for those of you who don't know, I was an infield guy, and it was the on the run stuff is a separator. Like, it's usually the difference between an average defender and a good defender. Can you play on the run? And it's not always just that direct slow roller. Like, can you V cut on the run? Can you cut a ball off the right way? Like, you don't get a ton of ground balls in game at the college level where you get to rhythm into the ground ball and you get to get your feet together and you get to the arm slot that you want to get to all the time. Like, when you're playing in the middle of the field, specifically shortstop, you have to be able to play from different heights. You have to be able to play at different speeds. You have to be comfortable attacking a ball to get a good hop. You need to be able to throw from multiple angles. I think it's really important from the third base side. I think not just the being able to charge the ball, which is, you know, obviously part of playing third, but being able to throw from multiple slots at third base is a game changer when you're talking about turning double plays, right? Not having to stand straight up and get to that high slot to feel comfortable to throw, but being able to transfer from, you know, the waist height and being able to deliver a catchable ball. We always talk about uphill feeds. Well, you can create an uphill feed from that angle if you don't throw from a super high slot. So that the ability to throw from multiple slots and the ability to play the ball on the run in a showcase setting, if you can do those, it's a really good way for people to – it's a really good way to catch people's eye that they want to pay attention to come game time. So, yeah, those are big for me. Like, yeah, if you catch it and you throw it over there with some arm speed, like, I might not cross you off my list, but, you know, it's one of those things that's not as tangible. I want to see how a guy moves. You know, you got life in your body. You know, that matters to me. And I think it matters, you know, the next transition is to behind the plate. Everybody gets obsessed with the pop time, but I just want to see how a guy operates. Like, what's the transfer look like? How does feet work? Does the ball carry? Can you throw from an imperfect position? Like, we always laugh about this, but, you know, pop times are judged on generally like a glove side and high ball that's about as easy to transfer as you can. Like, I want to, what can you do when the ball's away from your glove and low? Do you have enough athleticism to be able to snatch that ball and get your body in position to make a throw? So I'm looking at, how does a kid move and does the ball carry? And are you giving the guy a chance at second base? If you're a 2-0 and you do those things, like, you're probably a really good player. So yeah, the pop time matters, but it doesn't matter nearly as much as people think. And, you know, you see these kids put up 1.8 pop times. Like, I'm sorry, it's bullshit. It's not real. You know, when JT Realmuto throws 1.8s in game, 15-year-old high school kids don't do that. So I'm looking less about the pop time and more about the movement. How does it carry? What's your arm look like in terms of, you know, your action, and, you know, can you get the ball out? That's what's important to me.
Yeah. The old pop time. I am not the biggest fan of the pop time in the showcase, and I get it. It's really the only tangible measurement that you have in a showcase setting for catchers. Like, you can't grade people out on blocking, receiving. It's the only thing that you can legitimately put a number to and say, like, hey, this is what this is, and, you know, here we go. To your point, the majority of them are always going to be like, balls are going to be thrown right down the middle or glove side and high, so people can kind of get their feet going and throw. I know these numbers are very, very inflated. You know, everyone wants to say that they have all these guys. You know, for me, I'm looking for the same things you are: your exchange, the carry of the baseball, and where are we putting the baseball in, along with how well our feet work. Like, I can teach you to throw faster if your feet work and you have a clean exchange. Any catching guy can. The carry of the baseball and where you're actually putting the ball matters in the context of a pop time. Like, people like if you're a 1-9 and the second base or shortstop is reaching their arm way up into the air for that ball, you're not a 1-9 because that ball has to get caught and then brought down to the base to tag the runner. Like you just became a 2-2-2-3 depending on, you know, where it is. Right, left, same thing. If you're left of second base, like you're not throwing anybody out because the defender, the second base shortstop has to go out towards shortstop to catch a ball when the runner is coming into second base. They're safe. Same thing going too far right. You know, if you're playing on turf, you can live with bouncing baseballs, but you also have to have someone on the tail end to be able to pick that baseball up for you. You know, you have to be in the tag zone, which is where they're going to be able to catch it and be able to apply a tag almost instantly. That to me, like if you're a 2-0 there, yes, you are. Anything other than that, you're not a 2-0. You're not a 195, you're not a 187, like you're not. If you're all over the plate, like if people are just legitimately going, they caught it, you caught it in your glove and you threw it and they caught it, and no, it was a 187, like, yeah, it was at shortstop. Like, that's not good. You know, and that the flip side to it is, and this is one of the things that I don't necessarily that doesn't get talked about and brought up a lot, is that like the college game, there's not a whole lot of in regards to the college game itself, you're likely going to be like, you're going to catch between 250 baseballs. If you're the starting catcher, you're going to probably block 20 ish, maybe a little bit more. Like you might like legitimately throw in game. I'm not talking in between innings. You legitimately might throw 3 to 4 times a game. You know, so like, yes, you have to get your best throws off there, but it's so dependent situationally and on pitchers. You know, we've talked about this, I think, on one of our shorts. Like, if you have a guy who's a 1-7, like, you have no shot. It doesn't matter how good of a throw you are. Like, you got no shot. You know, so like, it's so situationally and dependent upon those types of things that from a showcase setting, like, yeah, you kind of want to show it off, but you know, you're really going to want to be able to show in game, like your receiving and blocking ability, because those are going to be the things that you're going to have to do day in, day out, 200 times, 20, 30 times. If you're playing that day, like you have to be good at those in order to get into the lineup. The bare minimum is that you have to be able to catch the baseball consistently in a really good, strong position and block the baseball. Like those are the things that guys are looking at when it comes to catching. Like, well, you can get taught a quicker pop time. Now, if you're a 3-0 in a showcase, like, I don't know what we're going to work with there. But if there's athleticism there, you can catch the baseball and be strong at the point of contact and be able to steal pitches. And you can also block baseballs. You know, you're going to be able to find yourself a position, you know, a place at a college to be, you know, at least be recruitable in that sense. It's not always going to be predicated on what your pop time is, and very rarely is it going to be like, yeah, I recruited this guy because he was a 2-0 thrower solely. Like, you know, in order to throw the 2-0, you have to catch. So if you're going to catch, you have to catch the baseball, and you have to be really good at it given the amount of baseballs that you're going to have to catch day in and day out. Sorry, got on my soapbox there.
No, but it's true. I mean, you're a catcher first and foremost. Like, you know, when you get to the college level, you're talking about tenths of a second difference between safe and out. So the accuracy is really important. But I mean, at the end of the day, your pitchers need to want to throw to you. Like, nobody cares if you're a 1-8 thrower if the pitchers hate throwing to you because they have no confidence in your ability to block a ball. They have no confidence in your ability to present a baseball to an umpire. So if you can't check those two boxes, the throw stuff doesn't really matter that much. Like, tools are great. And yeah, like, you know, do you need to be able to throw? Like, yeah, absolutely. Like, you can't be a complete, you know, below average thrower, but being accurate and having an acceptable arm is oftentimes enough, especially if there's some athleticism there. So yeah, should you, just like the infield in right field, wherever you're throwing in the outfield, you need to be able to showcase arm strength, but you don't need to sacrifice it by taking yourself out of a game situation during the showcase setting. Like, play it like it's a game and get the ball out of your hands and do it like you would do it in a game. If you do that, I'm way more apt to pay attention to you if you're an outfielder who can throw a ball in a taggable position, if you're an infielder who can get the ball out of their hands, and if you're a catcher who's going to throw accurate, who's going to give me a chance at second base, I'd much rather see that than, oh, well, he was 84 miles an hour behind the plate. Like, he's got great arm strength. Well, yeah, he threw three in a right center field, so I got no place for that. Like, it's a merry-go-round. Maybe a little bit.
Round and round we go.
Be a little bit mean there, but, and maybe a little bit hyperbolic, but I think the crowd gets what we're picking up. Offensively, right, you get the BP round. If you got juice, and you need to be honest with yourself, this goes back to the honest assessment. If you got juice, yeah, you should probably try to go and elevate something. Or maybe a controversial statement, but like, if you got some juice and you can leave a yard, like, you probably want to showcase your ability to do that. But you're going to catch a lot of eyes as a player if you can take a really good mid-level ball flight, middle of the field BP. Like, that's what fires coaches up. So if you can pound a bunch of balls in the middle of the field with some bat speed, with some approach, that's kind of the ideal BP round for me. If you can haul off and leave it pole side, like, yeah, go ahead. I got nothing wrong with seeing a little bit of juice. But you see a lot of kids who their best bolt's like 275 feet trying to elevate. Like, you're much better trying to hit a bunch of line drives over the shortstop's head than you are hitting 280-foot pop-ups in terms of how you frame up your batting practice. So for kids out there, this is my stance. Keith, I'm curious to hear yours, but I want some gap type contact. I want a kid who's attacking the ball with some bat speed and has a little bit of feel for the barrel, right? It's not a bunch of rollover stuff to third base, and it's not a bunch of easy fly balls to the center fielder trying to show off juice. Like, I want to see a kid who can hit the ball hard, not pop it up to the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, that's the name of the game. Like, you're looking for, you know, when I was coaching, what I was always looking for were guys that were going to be on the barrel for as long as they possibly can be. You know, the longer that you can keep that barrel in the zone, the more margin for error you're going to give yourself. You know, I was never really that interested in the like, if you got juice, like, yeah, show it off. If you got the bat speed and you got the juice and you can leave the yard, like, let me see it. You know, but if you don't, like, maybe we shouldn't do that. Because if I'm just going to watch you pop up every at bat that you take, like, if you're not hitting in games, you're not necessarily going to be the most recruitable. Like, no one's really ever going to recruit you based off the fact that you have, you know, he has a pretty good exit speed and, you know, he hits the ball hard, but he hits it just straight up in the air. I mean, eventually when he gets stronger, they're probably going to go out. Like, okay, but what are you doing now? Like, if you're not hitting now, by hitting, I mean, like, you're actually getting on base, like, your batting average is pretty healthy. If you're not hitting now, like, it doesn't get easier at the next level. So it's not like you're likely not going to hit at the next level. So you need to showcase the fact that you're going to actually be able to handle the pitching that you're going to be seeing. You know, so you're right. You know, if you're barreling baseballs gap to gap, like, I'm all in. I'm going to circle you. I'm going to watch you play. If you can elevate pole side, I'm going to circle you. You know, if you can, you know, not necessarily looking for people to just backside ground balls to second base, you know, but if there's some, you know, it's a little bit of ability in there. Like, it depends on what you're looking for. Right. But, you know, you want to, on the same hand, kind of play to your strengths too. You know, if you're a middle infielder who's, you know, not a huge kid and, you know, yeah, just line drive the ball, backside it all day long, play to your strengths, you know, and coaches will see that and they'll know that and they'll watch you. You know, it's not, you know, they go off of the, you know, hundreds of thousands of times that they've watched this stuff. You know, they know what they're looking for. They know what they're seeing. So, like, they'll be able to, you know, get through the nuance of that stuff. But, you know, you're right. The stay gap to gap, work baseballs back through the field, you'll be all right.
Yeah, I think it's important to distinguish that you're still trying to hit the ball hard. Like, you're still trying to impact the baseball. but it's the intent and understanding what you do well, right? Like power is the last tool that comes for any young hitter, right? You need to be able to hit before you can hit for power. And for young guys, if you can consistently put the barrel on the baseball and hit the ball hard, as you get stronger, as you become a more mature hitter, understanding pitch sequences and pitch location and when you can go and try to get one, like that's how you learn how to hit for power. You don't learn how to hit from power from trying to elevate in the batting cage. You learn how to hit from power in a game because you become a more mature hitter who's stronger, but also has a significantly better feel for the strike zone, understands where pitch locations that you can try and go get versus, you know, being able to handle, you know, handle the bat. But, you know, you hear people say, well, a kid takes a professional round of BP. When they say that, they're not talking about him leaving it down the left field line. They're talking about a kid who has some balance in their swing. They attack the barrel. They attack the ball with bat speed, and they're able to consistently hit the ball with good ball flight in the middle of the field. In game, I like to see the kids be able to elevate the ball pull side a little bit because I think it shows me that they got some hand strength. But in a fairly controlled environment in batting practice, I really just like a kid who can consistently hit the ball hard with good ball flight. And that's something that we preached all the time at BP. Like, it's batting practice, right? Do we get to back end of rounds and let guys try to go get some? Yeah, absolutely. Because they need to be able to feel that. They need to understand that this is the pitch I can elevate pull side. So I need to go get this one. But BP in a showcase, bang it back up the middle hard, and you'll probably get some attention. Pitching. This is showcase setting for pitching. Like, I don't think the important stuff ever goes away, right? Like, if you throw 83, throw 83 and pitch, right? If you throw 88, throw 88 and pitch. But I think in a showcase setting, you still need to focus on getting people out, right? Period. Reaching back for velo has its place, but let's be honest, if you pitch comfortably at 84, reaching back to 86 and not being able to locate is probably not getting it done, right? If you're like a comfortable 85 and you can command the ball, like, just be really good at 85 and maybe reach back in a spot to show an 87. But unless you're a really hard thrower, I think it comes down to, can you throw strikes? Like, that's
sure
number one. Like, can you attack hitters, and then can you spin the ball? Those are the first thing I go after. Like, velo is great and it matters. It absolutely does, but it's going to matter differently to different people depending on that school, your age. But simply reaching back to throw 87, like, I'd rather see a pitch at 84 than watch your scatter balls at 87 and have no idea where it's going.
Yeah, I mean, I think velo is king right now. You know, but I think the being able to show the ability to pitch is just as big in a showcase setting, right? And I think there's two kind of aspects to this. It is when we're talking about, you know, kind of showcases in camp, sometimes it's going to be just a one day, 2-3 inning thing. You know, and in some instances, kids are primed to show up and throw three innings and really show up and show out on those three. The flip side is you have some of these bigger camps, you know, like a head first or a show ball, where, you know, kids are thrown on back-to-back days, you know, and how to kind of attack that, you know. So I think there's kind of two different things, but I think, you know, you're right from the standpoint of, like, being able to show the ability to pitch and throw strikes and get outs is going to trump, you know, some of the velocity stuff. You know, and I think the flip side to that, like, you always know when kids are going to throw on the second day of head first or show ball, like, they're not going to have their best stuff. Their velo is going to be down. Like, it is what it is. Like, it's just like they haven't done this likely before, so it's going to be down. You know, the other side of it is, as coaches, we also know, like, depending on the kid, if you haven't seen them before, it might, you might not know, but if you've seen them before or you have a relationship with that kid and you're watching them again, like, you kind of have an idea of the innings log on that kid, depending on the, you know, the certain point of the summer. You know, you're getting towards tail end of the summer and kids are you know, a lot of innings on them, you know, the velo is going to be down anyways, you know, so like, it's being able to show the pitchability is I think key, because if you can show that you can command the fastball, you can command an off-speed pitch, you can get outs, you know, you can show that type of stuff, even though you might not have your best velo and things of that nature. Like, if they've seen you before up to 85 and now you're at 82, 83, but you're pitching, like, there's something in there. It's like, okay, like, you know, coaches say this all the time, like, it's in there. I've seen it. I've seen him up to 86, like, it's in there, but he just hasn't, you know, he's got a lot of innings. He's tired, you know, and that happens a lot more nowadays because of what we've done to the AAU and the showcases and everything from a recruiting standpoint. But you're going to see a lot of guys, like, you know, it doesn't necessarily count as an inning, but you go out to a, you know, a showcase and throw to 10 hitters, like, you just threw another 2 to 3 innings, depending on how good you are, right? Like, you know, you go 3 up, 3 down for that's 3 innings you just threw. You know, it could be one really long inning where, you know, you're probably not left in for 10 hitters, but, you know, it could be 2 innings where you get to 5. You know, so there's like, those are innings that I don't think are necessarily being counted. And those are things that kind of have to be brought into the conversation when you're evaluating. But the fact remains that if you can show the pitchability aspect, you know, it depending on your body type and where you're at, like, most coaches are going to, you know, assume that if, you know, the floor, let's say their floor is 82. If you can pitch at 82 and get outs, they're going to look at it and be like, okay, arm works. He's got pitchability. The breaking ball works. We can get him bigger, faster, stronger. I've seen him up to 84. There's more in there, you know? So like I think that if you can meet the floor of the program that is recruiting you or whoever's out there, what their floor is, and you show that pitchability, you're going to be recruitable, at least to that program, and likely a handful more, you know? So I'm with you. I think you're right. I think being able to show the ability to command pitches, to command the fastball, to be able to get outs, that is going to be a big thing in a showcase setting. The velo will follow if it's in there. Now, you know, if you're commanding the ball at 72 with a 58 mile an hour breaker, like, that's not going to play at the college level. Like, it's just not going to play. I'll say it. I'm sorry, but that's the reality. Like, doesn't play right now. That doesn't mean that it's not going to, you know, you're not going to get bigger, faster, stronger and be able to throw the ball harder and be able to do it. It doesn't mean that. But it means, like, in the moment, if you're commanding the ball from 70 to 72 miles an hour with a breaking ball that's going to be in the 50s, like, that's not in college baseball. So you need to get better. You shouldn't be at a showcase. You should be getting stronger and working on being able to throw the baseball harder so that you can get to a showcase and be better than that.
Yeah, I think the other thing that gets lost in the sauce, if you will, is that coaches aren't looking at your best bullet. Right. They're looking at where do you pitch at, right? It's one thing to be able to touch 90, but if 80% of the rest of your fastballs are 85 to 87, like, you don't throw 90, you throw 85 to 87. And coaches are going to look at that like, yeah, it's nice to hit a number, but coaches want to see, like, what do you effectively pitch at? But to your point, the evaluation goes well beyond just the velocity. It's your frame, it's your ability to command the ball. How does your arm work? Can you spin the ball? Do you have a secondary pitch? What's your mound presence? Like, yeah, velo is going to catch some eyes, but it's just going to make people watch a little bit longer. But if you're 88 and you can't throw a strike and you have no feel for a secondary pitch, coach might be there a little bit longer. It might peel back that onion a little bit more, maybe get to know you, maybe do a little bit of a deeper dive into you, but you still need to be able to do the things that translate to the college level, which is you need to be able to command a ball. You need to be able to show that you can compete and throw a bunch of strikes. And yeah, velo does matter, but you can throw hard and get passed on because you don't do some of the other stuff. Like, prime example, William Kirk, he's the best left-hander in the state of New Jersey, might be one of the best left-handed pitchers in the whole country. And I think this is worth the story because I think it kind of frames up the evaluation process with pitchers very nicely. So Will was 80 to 82 18 months ago. So February going into his sophomore year. So sophomore year, he's like 80 to 82. He's 6'3", long, lanky, built the right way in terms of what you look for from a pitcher. High-level command. I'm not talking high school command. I'm talking he has probably average major league command today as a 17-year-old. Can really pitch, can command the ball. He was 83 to 85 when University of Virginia came to see him. And they offered him, and he's committed to go to UVA because of all the things that you talked about, that the arm worked, the presence was there, he competed his butt off, he threw a ton of strikes, he had a feel for a secondary pitch. They didn't care about his current velo as much because they felt super confident that he was going to add that velo naturally, but all the other secondary traits that don't show up on a radar gun were so high level that he didn't really care that he topped out at 86 that day and most of his fastballs are 83. Fast forward 18 months, he's 89 and 92, and he's one of the best prospects in the country. And I think it's important for people to understand that, yeah, velo does matter, but coaches are looking at way more than just what your velocity is. And it's a hard thing to wrap your head around because we get obsessed with posting these things on social media and on different, you know, websites, but the evaluation is always going to be more than the metrics. The metrics will catch some eyes, but the evaluation is always going to go deeper than the metric. I'll leave it at that.
You're dead right. Right. You know, and I just think that to answer the kind of the listener question, that, you know, it's more of a, you know, you want to showcase yourself as best your ability, but you also want to be able to show that you have some pitchability in there and, you know, not blow it out on day one to where day two you're, you know, not even serviceable at all, you know, but I there's a lot more nuance to it than I think people think, but to be able to show that pitchability, and that's a great, you know, kind of story to tell there, that it's not, you know, it's not always going to be about velo, you know, it's in some instances, yes, like the velo, not always like there's a floor that you have to meet for velo not to necessarily matter, right? Like there's a floor, like if you throw 70, like you're below the floor, like that's where it is. Like you should be getting stronger in order to try to throw harder, you know, but once you kind of meet that floor for, you know, a certain level or a certain program, like then you, like now you're going to be recruitable, you know, and then work from there.
One tip before we get into how to stand out in terms of behavior and interaction, because I think that's a really important piece of this, right? The workout portion is obviously where the metrics are going to get collected, and it may be your first glance, and like you have a certain amount of control over that. But you kind of are what your physical abilities are. Like if you run a 6'6", great. If you run a 7'2", great. There's other ways that you can stand out. But one of the tips I would give to pitchers, and I think that a lot of high school kids don't do this, is you need to warm up. I cannot count how many times you watch a pitcher in a showcase setting go down, they don't stretch out, they don't throw, they don't get off the mound, and they go into the game and they're upset that they didn't throw well. Like your preparation matters. So if you're a kid who has a routine, don't sacrifice your routine for the showcase. I guarantee you that if you go up to whoever is running that showcase and you say, hey, coach, I just want to know when I'm scheduled to pitch, right? Or if you know ahead of time, make sure that you budget enough time to do your whole workout so that you can put your best foot forward. Like if you need to long toss or stretch it out before you have an outing, you need to do everything in your power to make sure that you go through that same routine. If you throw weighted balls or you do band work or you do a certain warm-up and it takes you 30 minutes to get there, all the other stuff doesn't matter. Like in that showcase setting, you got to take care of number one. Go make sure you get your preparation work in. Don't feel like you're confined to a schedule when you can make sure that you fit your work in to get yourself ready to go out there and compete. I think that's huge for pitchers, is that a lot of times they grab a ball, they go, you know, turn their arm around a few times, do a couple band exercises, and they get up on the mound, and then they expect to be good when they get in the game. Like go through your routine, give yourself the best chance possible to be good. Because the first inning is always the hardest inning. It's one thing that I think a lot of kids in college find out is they generally need to throw more in the bullpen before they get on the mound, and they kind of need to get that first inning out of the way. I think it's especially important in a showcase setting when you may only have 20 pitches. Like, you want to make sure those are the best 20 pitches you got loaded up for that day. So do everything you can to stack the chips in your favor.
Yeah. I mean, couldn't agree more.
How to stand out from a non-skill perspective, right? I think this probably doesn't get talked about enough. I know it's something that's really important to us, and it really shows up in a camp setting, but it does show up in the showcase setting as well. As how do you present yourself, right? Don't look like the kid who doesn't have his shit together. Like, that's usually a good place to start. Like, have your cleats tied, like, have your hat on right, have your shirt tucked in, have a belt. Like, start with the really simple stuff that is super controllable, and like, make sure that when you step on the field, you look like a ball player, because like it or not, it's the first impression you have with coaches is they look at you in a uniform and how you present yourself. You know, until you're an absolute bro, that's undeniable. You still need to act the part, right? Like, you're not a big leaguer. Right. Like, you don't get to take BP with your hat on backwards like Ken Griffey Jr. until you're Ken Griffey Jr. Like, until you're that good. It's like, do the little stuff. Make sure your uniform fits right. You know, make sure you've got your glove on. You know, make sure you know where you're going. Like, I think that's the first place to start, because it's the first impression that you make with coaches is like, do you look like you're a baseball player?
The being able to look the part is half the battle. You know, very rarely are you fooled by somebody who doesn't necessarily look the part, who then shows up and is really, really good. You know, they're out there, don't get me wrong, they are, but generally speaking, the more often than not, the better you can present yourself, and the way that you wear your uniform and look, and I'm not trying to sound like we're old here, but the reality is, like, if you show up looking like you're a little discombobulated and there's nothing going on there, like, likely, you know, no one's really going to want to pay attention, you know, unless you're unbelievable. But the better that you can kind of put that foot forward and make yourself look good, then, you know, people are going to kind of take notice and pay attention to what that kind of looks like. You know, the other is, you know, being able to, you know, what type of energy do you bring when in these showcases and camps? You know, Coach Ferris used to say all the time, don't be a drain, be a fountain. You know, so you want to be able to have some energy and really be, you know, to show your motor. And, you know, if you're a high motor kid, be a high motor kid. You know, if you got energy, play with energy. You know, and it's, you know, obviously people can tell when it's fake. You know, so if you are somebody who is a high motor kid and you play with energy, like, do that, show that. Like, people want to see, you know, what it is that you bring to the table, to what you can, you know, how could you potentially help their program? You know, if it's a high motor, you know, program, like, you might be a fit for them, you know, so show that stuff, you know. And it's fun to be around people who have that high motor and are go, 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 you know, the entire time. You know, but things like that, you know, and I think the other is, like, being able to understand, like, look, the one thing that I will tell you, like, yes, I told you at the front part of this podcast that, like, I like that it's pressure filled and you can see how people react and what's going to happen. Like, you still want to have positive body language if things aren't going well for you, and how you react to those types of things will tell coaches a lot about yourself. You know, if you struggle and you quit right away, then, you know, then I'm going to automatically kind of cross your name off the list. You know, but if you work through some of the things where it's like, yeah, you know what, he wasn't great on the offensive side or the defensive side, but it was okay. And then I watched him hit and he did a really good job in BP. And then in the gameplay, like, I haven't seen the kid make an error. He's made literally every single play and it's good. You know, like, you know, if you can come back from that stuff and at least show that there's a little bit of toughness and a little bit of, you know, you got something to you, like, that's going to show up as well. Like, coaches will be able to say, like, hey, like, wasn't that good in defense in the showcase, but in gameplay, like, wow, it's different. And that, like, there's shows us that you're like, there's something there mentally that is worth kind of digging into. Cause there's a lot of kids that I've recruited that weren't great from the showcase. Like, they were okay in the showcase. Like, didn't, you know, it was just average. And then in gameplay, like, it plays above. And I've seen, can't tell how many kids I've seen where it's like, they show up and show out in the showcase and you put them in a game and it's like, not going to play, you know? So if you can have a little bit of a setback, or maybe you don't do as well as you did, but you come back and you play well in games, it tells people about you that you're probably a little bit tougher than most.
Yeah. I mean, everybody has their moments where things don't go perfect and you don't react the best way, but let's be honest, if you're in a camp setting or a showcase setting and you know people are watching, like, just dial it in for 2 days, right? I mean, it's really that simple for me. Like, if it's that important to you, you're going to go play with energy. I mean, if you spend $1,000 to show up and jog out a ground ball to shortstop, why are we even there?
What are we doing?
Yeah, what are we doing? Like, there's no excuse to not play. It's not game 150 of on a team that's not going to make the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, it's not. Like, you're playing for an opportunity to play college baseball. If you can't bust your ass down the first baseline, what makes me think that you're going to do it in game 47 when we're trying to win, you know, regular season conference championship? Like, I can't rely on that guy. So energy matters, right? And the energy thing in terms of getting on and off the field, like, yeah, fake it. Vocal stuff, I don't worry so much about that. Like, you can tell when kids are being vocal just to be vocal. I'm not super concerned with, like, overly vocal kids, but let your body language, let the energy that you play with be noticeable. I think that's really important. And then, yeah, to your point, like, how do you react to when things don't go good in that setting? To me, I've given this a lot of thought recently because body language matters a ton. But I think that kids who react to failure with quality body language, what it tells me about them is that there's a level of confidence that doesn't matter, I'll get them next time, because they have enough understanding that, like, you fail in this game, but I'm good enough to where, like, okay, like, I'll just, like, my next at bat, like, we'll roll. Or, yeah, the kid hit a leadoff double. Instead of pouting about it, like, I'm really good, so I'm going to get out of this inning. And I think that tells me a lot about a kid when you can see that, because now not only do I know that you react well to that situation, but I got a little bit of a feel for, like, this is a fairly confident kid, and confidence is a game-changing factor in college baseball. And the kids who can play confidently because they prepared well are the kids who are successful. So two tips: high energy, good body language. If you can do those two things, somebody is going to pay attention to you. For me, it's really that simple. So those would be the big takeaways for me. Like, don't be the guy who doesn't show up like they want to be there, right? And, like, energy is the biggest way to show that you want to be somewhere. Like, have a little bit of excitement, you know, be excited to be around some people and get a chance to compete. Any other tips you got, Coach?
My closing tip will be, if you find yourself at a camp or a showcase or whatever it might be, and there is an opportunity to talk to coaches, whether it's, you know, after or during or, you know, in the middle, whatever, take that opportunity and understand that it's showing a lot to the coaches if you can go up and at least just have a conversation with somebody. It's an awkward time in your life. I get it. Like, I enjoyed them when I was coaching. I thought that it took a lot for kids to kind of walk up to you and, you know, kind of give you their elevator pitch at 15, 16, 17 years old. And that's not easy to do, you know? So it's something that, you know, I know there's probably a lot of anxiety around it. You know, and I do think, and this is a pet peeve of mine, and I'm going to throw this out there. Like, it drove me nuts when younger coaches would try to, like, would bash the process a little bit. Like, grow up. You know, like, these kids, it's a lot on these kids to be able to come out and talk to, these coaches, you know, so like, let's give these kids a little bit of grace here and understand that like it's a big thing for them. Like have answers prepared for kids, tell them, you know, give them confidence in what it is that they should be doing, you know. But I think that if you have that opportunity to be able to do that in a showcase, it's awesome to kind of be able to put a face to names and say, hey, how you doing? I'm so-and-so, you know, really nice to meet you. This is what I'm interested in, you know, ask a question or two and move on. You know, but I think that it's a tough thing, I think, for kids to do. But if you have the opportunity to do it, take full advantage of it. And if you're a coach or somebody who's getting into coaching, listening to this, understand that it's hard for those kids to do it. You likely didn't do it when you were a kid either. So, you know, swallow your pride, you know, understand that you are in this for the kids and answer the questions and be a professional about it.
Hitting them hard, coach. Yeah. If you're a young coach or just a coach in general, you may be an old coach. Like, don't be an ass. You know, if you're at a showcase and those kids have an opportunity to talk to you and you think you're too good to talk to a kid, like you need to look in the mirror and recognize that, like, you might need to reprioritize some stuff. It's really hard. You make a really good point. 16-year-old to come up and shake a hand and introduce themselves to you in that setting, you at least owe them a thanks for coming over, bud. Like, why don't you shoot me an email when you get home from camp and I'll follow up with some feedback. Like, you don't have to tell the kid that you're going to recruit him. Like, don't lie to him, but at least give the kid a second, say hello to him. There's nothing wrong with that. I think that's a perfect way to end it. And pick up your cups. Get your cups in the trash. But no, I think that covers it pretty good. And for listeners, yeah, the showcase thing can be tough. And in summary, you know, the metrics do matter, but I think it's important to show that you can play the game. Make sure you're preparing yourself accordingly for these settings and play with some energy and have some good body language, and you put yourself in a pretty good situation. So that's it for this week. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit the subscribe button, smash it.
Throttle it.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at EMD Baseball. If you want to know more about what me and Keith do to help families and student athletes, hit us up on the interwebs, www.emdbaseball.com. We are here to take all your recruiting questions. And that's it for tonight. Thanks, everybody.